This presentation is brought to you by Character Concepts, a ministry of Rick and Marilyn Boyer and family. For more information on our ministry and our products, including the Character Concepts Bible-based character curriculum, please go to characterconcepts.com.
And the last chapter, chapter number 25, the title of this chapter is Goodbye to Airship Andy. "A visitor for you, Mars Andy," announced Scipio. "It's only me," said Mr. Chase, stepping into the sitting room of the aerodrome at the park's camp. "Well, no one is more welcome, Mr. Chase," declared Andy heartily. "Come in, sit down, and make yourself at home." "Not till I ask a certain question," dissented the grizzled lockup keeper of Princeville. "Fire away," smiled Andy. "What's the question?"
"Can you get me a job?"
"Right off, and a good one," responded Andy promptly. "My employer, Mr. Parks, is going into the airship line as a regular professional, and I don't know a better all-around handyman I would recommend sooner than you."
"All right," said Chase with a sigh of relief, dropping into a chair and placing a bulging ancient carpet bag on the floor. Carpet bag was an old-fashioned style of suitcase. "I'm done with lockups."
"Is that so, Mr. Chase?"
"It is, with that conscienceless old grafter Talbot. You know, I told you I was waiting for something when I last saw you."
"Yes," nodded Andy. "It was Wandering Dick."
"So you told me."
"I sent that trap after him. He found him. I got from Dick what I wanted, paid for it, resigned my position, and now I'm here."
"Quick work. And here's what I got from Wandering Dick."
Chase extended to Andy a neatly folded paper.
"And what is this, Mr. Chase?" asked Andy.
"A confession and affidavit."
"How does that interest me?"
"Read and see."
Andy's face grew interested and then startled as he perused the sheet of paper. It was a legal document attested to by Wandering Dick before a regular justice of the peace at Princeville. In his affidavit, the tramp stated that on the night that the barn of Farmer Jones burned down, he was in its haymow. He saw distinctly the two boys who set the fire, Gus Talbot and Dale Billings. He got out of the way for fear of being charged with the crime, sought later shelter at the jail, and told Chase about it. The latter was so dependent upon Talbot, and in dread of the garage keeper, who held his position at his mercy, that he made no move to ride Andy with the public until the latter was arrested.
"You've done nobly, Mr. Chase," said Andy with deep gratitude. "And where's your bill of expenses to settle?"
"Settle nothing," flared out Chase stormily. "You ever mentioned it again, and I'll get out of here bag and baggage double quick."
"Well, well," answered Andy. "We'll try to find some way to make it up to you."
2 days later, Andy learned that the attention of Seth Talbot had been called to the affidavit. Runaway Gus Talbot and Dale Billings had returned to Princeville. In some way, the garage keeper settled with Farmer Jones, hushed up the matter, and sent his graceless son on a sea voyage. The charge against Andy was, of course, dismissed. Andy went to visit Dusk in the town hospital. His accomplice, Tyrell, had been driven out of the aviation camp and threatened with a coat of tar and feathers if he ever returned. The rest of Dusk's party disappeared, and creditors seized what little property he had. Dusk would never drive a balloon or airship again. One arm and one foot were broken, and he had sustained other severe injuries. Andy found him a dispirited, wretched man. He had an object in visiting the crippled aeronaut. He began by telling Dusk that deeply as he tried to wrong Parks, the latter had ordered and paid for the best care during his stay in the hospital.
"I am circulating a subscription paper among the aviators," added Andy. "We expect to raise $1,000 for you to go to some quiet town and buy some small business that will give you a living."
No person could resist the kindliness of Andy under the circumstances. Dusk broke down completely. He was as sincere and penitent as a man of his rough mold of mind could be.
"I don't deserve it. I've been a bad man," he declared with tears in his eyes. "What can I do for you for all your kindness to me?"
"You can do something, Mr. Dusk," said Andy. "There's a man named Morse. Do you know him?"
"Why, yes, I do," replied Dusk with a great start.
"Do you?"
"I happen to." "What has he got to do with you and me?"
"Just this," said Andy. "You've treated him badly. He is my friend. You had a hold on him. What was it?"
"A forgery he never committed."
"Are you willing to prove that and clear him?"
"Yes, indeed. I've done enough wickedness in the world."
"Then clear his name of an unjust charge so he can stand before the public the good, noble man he is."
"I will," declared Dusk earnestly, and he did.
One week after the airship race, Mr. Webb, to whom Andy had sent the old leather pocketbook by registered mail the day he recovered it, came down to the park's camp. "I've been too busy to come before," he explained to Andy. "That document in the old leather pocketbook took up my time. I tell you, Nelson, it has brought brightness and comfort to two orphan children in a grand way."
"I'm very glad," said Andy.
"I got back the $200 you left at the bank in Princeville," continued Mr. Webb. "I've added something to it, and my attorneys have directed me to pay you what they intended to give the finder of the pocketbook, $500. Andy made some demur at the largeness of the amount, but Mr. Webb was persistent and declared he was simply acting as agent for the lawyers, and Andy had to take the money.
"As to myself," observed the gentleman, "I want to say what you must already know, Nelson. I am greatly interested in you. I wish you could suggest some way in which my means can benefit you."
"So do I," broke in John Parks. "The lad is a genius in the aviation line, and I want him to keep on at it."
"Don't I intend to?" challenged Andy.
"Not when you say you're going to leave me next month," declared the aeronaut.
"Yes, but why?" said Andy. "I'll leave it to Mr. Webb here if I have not decided in a sensible, practical way."
"What is it, Nelson?" inquired Mr. Webb.
"Why, I have over $2,500 in the bank. I want to put $1,000 of it aside for my half-brother when he turns up. He was good and kind to me in the old days, and I must not forget it. Then I want to go through college and learn something so I may be of some use in the world."
"An excellent idea," committed Mr. Webb.
"Yes," growled Parks, but playfully, "and spoil a good aviator."
"Not at all," declared Andy quickly. "I love the airship business, Mr. Parks, but I want to learn every branch of the science that covers it. It looks as if airships are to be the coming vehicles of travel, you say, Mr. Parks. If that's so, everybody will be flying in time, and the professional aviator will be just a common everyday person."
"Well, I suppose that's so," admitted Parks.
"Then the wise man will be the one who knows how to build the airship. Well, I'll go through college, come out with my head chock full of new ideas, and Mr. Webb and you and I will get up the world's airship construction company."
"That's a pretty grand scheme, Nelson," said Mr. Webb.
"Mayn't it become a true one?"
"Yes, it may," said John Parks, "but I'll always think of you just as you are, Airship Andy."
The End.